welcome to another Leftovers podcast. Frank R. Curry here without Derek Kramer. He is just doing something else because he's lazy. So I decided to kidnap, as you hear, I decided to kidnap right from the WGR studios, the morning show producer for Howard and Jeremy, Brayton Wilson. Brayton.
Hi, Frank.
Are you enjoying your kidnapping?
It's been nice. I've been given some gummy bears, and I'm still waiting for a nice foot massage. And yeah, kidnapping's actually pretty fun.
Well,
this kidnapping,
yeah,
at least.
This kidnapping, not anyway. Okay. All right. Well, we're talking sports. We're gonna stick to hockey today because Game 7 is tonight. Caps Lightning from Tampa, 8 o'clock. Brent, what have you enjoyed most about the series, and what are you kind of expecting for tonight?
Well, I mean, the series has been a lot of ups and downs for both teams because, I mean, you look at Washington to start, they came out flying. They won the first two games in Tampa Bay. Then they go home, and Tampa Bay comes back, and they're the more desperate team. They get the two wins, and then they take Game 5 as well. While not playing so great, they still take Game 5. And then in Game 6, Washington looked like the desperate team. They looked like the team that was more ready to come out and play, and they outshot Tampa Bay 34-24, looked like the best team. And they force Game 7. Tonight, I'm hoping that both teams are ready to come and play. I hope that, you know, both teams are playing with some good speed and getting a lot of offensive chances. Because, I mean, I'm going to tell you what. If Tampa Bay, even on home ice, if they played anything like they did the other night in Game 6, there's just no way that they're going to win this game. They have to be desperate. They have to play as if their season's on the line, like they should at any point in this Stanley Cup playoff. Because you're one game away from the Stanley Cup final and going on to face the Vegas Golden Knights. You have to be able to play desperate. You got to play with a little bit of ambition. And I think the other night, with a chance to close it out in Washington, they just didn't do that. And I think that Washington got themselves back in the series. And tonight, there's a chance that that they can make the Stanley Cup final for just the second time in their franchise history. And if they can do that, I mean, man, what a collapse it would be for the Lightning. And it would just be a real shocker, in my opinion, because it would be
a shocker.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at how well Tampa Bay played at home all year, and they've been really good. It's just which Tampa Bay team's going to show up tonight. I think it'll be a great game. I think it should be a close one, and hopefully, you know, we get to see a really good Game 7 come out of Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that too. I'm wondering which Tampa team will show up. This series has been what you would say, just like a real momentum shift. As you said, Washington won the first two games, all the momentum's on their side. Then all of a sudden, the next two games go to Tampa. You know, the road team has won every game. There's that momentum shift right there. And Tampa continues it by winning Game 5 at home, and now it's back on Washington's side. And now it's a matter of, well, who's going to have it tonight? Both teams are going to put everything on the line. You know, they're going to give everything. It's really going to just be a matter of who wants it more. Who's gonna step up more than the other.
Yeah. And I mean, you look at how Washington played this last game in Game 6. They, from start to finish, outskated Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
They played with, you know, more tenacity. They were the team that was the most competitive, and it showed. They managed to get a 3-0 win while Tampa Bay looked like they were just coasting around. And at one point, it was just kind of like, oh, maybe we're going to, you know, have to go to Game 7 at home and try and send it back. Again, if Tampa Bay does the same thing, they're not going to be able to – they're probably not going to win the game because Washington is going to come out and they're going to play desperate, or at least we'd like to think so. If they come out playing like they did in Game 6 against Washington, you know, on the road, it's not going to help them out, regardless if they're at home or away. So, you know, Tampa Bay really needs to come out and show that they're ready to go and that they're ready to compete. And if not, that's going to be a problem. It's because Washington's just going to come out and they're just going to be more desperate and be the team that they've wanted to be for years. And Alex Ovechkin's looking to make a name for himself finally, you know. Well, I mean, he's already made a name for himself, he's looking to finally make a name for himself in the Stanley Cup playoffs because he's only been able to get as far as the conference semifinal, but now he's one win away from getting to the cup final for the first time. He's going to have the ambition to get there. And I'd watch out for him tonight because he's going to be motivated. And if he can, I mean, man, if he can get that team to the cup final, there's no telling what he's going to be able to do in the cup final, at least.
Yeah, after everything that the Cavs have been through in the playoffs the last 3 years, even further back in the Ovechkin era, now you finally have the opportunity to, on what was looked at as a weaker, it's definitely a weaker team than the last 3 years, and they're the ones that make the final. They're the ones that get over that hump. You know, it's funny how it works that way.
Yeah.
Sometimes you could feel the best team ever and still only get past round one.
That has been Washington.
And then you can feel a significantly weaker team and now is one win away from the championship.
Yeah.
It's just funny how it works that way in the NHL.
And you see how many acquisitions the Caps have made over the years to try and help boost their team, you know, in the playoffs. I mean, at one point they acquired Sergei Fedorov to help with their playoff run.
2009.
That really just fell flat on its face. Who else did you say? What did you just say?
No, I just said that was 2009.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right, 2009. But I mean, they've also, you know, acquired a bunch of other names, you know, in the
Justin
past.
Justin Williams.
Well, this year, they didn't really go out and make any acquisitions. They acquired Michael Kempney, and he's been solid for them, good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's better than going out and acquiring Mike Weber, you know.
Yeah,
and trying to help them for a playoff
run.
Last
year, Kevin Shattenkirk.
Yep, Kevin Shattenkirk. That fell flat on their face. Yep. This year, they really kind of stood pat with their team. I think they had confidence in what they had, and finally, it's starting to pay off. And you know, tonight could be a huge night for the franchise because hey, they're thinking we're going to go back to the Stanley Cup Final for the second time in our franchise's history, and this time around, we've got a superstar elite player in Alex Ovechkin, who's going to be there compared to the last time they were there, where their best player was Peter Bondra. And granted, Peter Bondra was a great player,
phenomenal player.
Nothing compared to Alex Ovechkin. No. And they're going to be playing a team in Vegas who they're an expansion team. They're a team that's kind of made up with a bunch of misfits, but they fit today's style of NHL. And yeah, it's going to be a great series, and Vegas is going to probably put up a great fight, but I think that's their best chance of winning the cup here is going, winning tonight and then going to the final and playing an expansion team that has little to no experience in playoffs with their players, at least. The team hasn't ever had any experience in the playoffs, obviously, but this team, Washington, if they win tonight, I would almost pick them to win the Stanley Cup. But then again, it's Vegas. I've picked against Vegas all year, and
they just keep winning.
They keep winning. They keep proving everybody wrong.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to the Stanley Cup final.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun
because besides Tampa, you know, we got new faces here. You know, last couple of years, it's Pittsburgh's been in, and they faced Nashville and San Jose. So there's a couple new faces yet, but then you had Chicago in it for a while. You had the Kings in it as well. Now we got, and Tampa made it and lost to Chicago, but now you're including Washington and Vegas in this mix. Vegas is already in. Now it's a matter of Tampa or Washington, and that's going to be a fun Stanley Cup final to watch. And I'm very excited for tonight. I'm going to say Tampa wins. I think I would watch for Vasilevsky to step up like he did in games 4 and 5, especially. If he can do that, there's no doubt in my mind that Tampa will come out of this. They have the experience.
I have to say with Vasilevsky, he has stepped up his game big time since the last series. The last series, he struggled a little bit. Granted, you know, I think maybe his defense kind of, you know, didn't really step up in front of him. Even though they still won in 5 games, Vasilevsky struggled against Boston. And in the start of this series, he struggled against Washington. But in the past 3 games, games 4, 5, 6, he's really stepped up his game. He looks like the goaltender he was during the regular season, and that's a Conn Smythe finalist.
Yeah.
If he's able to step up his game tonight, I think he'll be a factor. He'll be a factor for the Lightning in whether they win or he'll be a factor in helping them keep in the game with his strong play. The defense in front of Vasilevskiy, though, has to step up. And Tampa Bay's defense is kind of regarded as one of the better defensive groups in the NHL, wouldn't you say so?
I definitely. Victor Hedman, who's probably going to win the Norris.
Even guys you've like Anton Strahlman.
Who's been a solid player. They added Ryan McDonagh at the deadline.
Yep.
You got Mikhail Sergachev there.
Yep. And even if you want to say a guy like Dan Girardi is providing nice depth for them, even though he's
a
guy that's kind of fizzling out with his style of play.
To be fair on Girardi, he really hasn't been much of a liability in the playoffs.
That's at least been a good thing. He's been very methodical with his approach. Heck, he even scored an overtime winner against Boston.
Yeah.
Surprisingly enough, Dan Girardi, of the type of player he is, who's a guy that's going to be more defensive blocking shots, got to the net and redirected a puck in against Boston.
Right in front of the net.
Right, exactly. It's stuff that we don't anticipate.
Sure, okay.
So looking ahead at this game, I think the factors are definitely going to be for Tampa Bay goaltending and who's going to score that all-important goal for them, because you've got guys like Kucherov, you got guys like Stamkos, you got guys like... even like Alex Killorn has been important for them this year. And there's a number of guys that they have on that offense. Who's going to be the guy that's going to score for them in the most pivotal points?
I think it's Braden Point.
They have to have these guys scoring. They have to have them producing. Sure, I mean, they can chip in and make some great plays and create some chances. But I haven't really seen them produce, you know, those all-important plays all that much in these playoffs. That has to be a thing in game 7 here.
Yeah.
Whereas like for the Washington, they have to get Braden Holtby playing well. I think their defense has been playing solid shutdown defense, especially last game where they only gave up 24 shots on goal and Braden Holtby made it look really easy.
Yeah.
But I think a factor in for Washington in this game as well is guys like Ovechkin, and can they produce like they did in game 6 where all four of those lines, everybody was clicking in game 6 for Washington. They were dominant for a reason, and they need to get back to where they played in game 6 and played where they were at games 1 and 2, because everybody was clicking. If they can get everybody clicking from lines 1 through 4, defensive pairings 1 through 3, and the goaltending can be stout, that will increase their chances of moving on to the next round. And I think if they can do that, I would probably pick Washington to beat Tampa Bay in game 7. I think that's where I'm leaning towards. I think Tampa Bay has played really well when they need to, but you know, they had a chance to close out the series in game 6 in Washington and they kind of came up lackluster. And I know that they're at home and they play well at home. I just think Washington has a higher purpose to play for. I think Alex Ovechkin is really motivated. I think a lot of those guys are. And if they come out playing as well as they did in game 6, I think game 7 will be in their favor, and I think they'll win.
Yeah, I totally see that. I'm going to stick with Tampa. I think they'll win tonight. For a lot of teams, and what does seem to happen a lot, especially for like one team, especially for like when it's like one conference with another, you know, usually have like one team in one conference go on this magical run that we're seeing from Vegas, and we saw from Nashville last year, saw from San Jose 2 years ago. Then you have one team who they've been there before. They have the mindset to win. They know exactly what to do, and they do it. So I look at that and I think, well, Tampa. So I would say Tampa would win. Washington's going to come out. They're going to give Tampa everything, as you had just said. Ovechkin's going to be motivated the most. He's going to be the most motivated player on that team. As long as Braden Holtby can stand on his head, the defense plays the way it plays the solid defensive game that they do. If Dmitry Orlov can be the really good player that he is, he's got so much talent, and he's just not consistent with it. He'll have games where he's the best defenseman out there, and then he'll have games where he's the worst. So if he can be that best defenseman tonight for Washington, they really do have a great opportunity to win.
I'd say this game 7 goes to overtime tonight.
I would not be surprised.
I would love it.
I would love it.
Nice finish to a great series. And really then, you know, whoever wins, hopefully the Stanley Cup final will be just as good.
If there's anybody on Tampa that I think is going to step up, I was trying to say it earlier, I think it's Braden Point. He's been so good for them all year. 60-point rookie player, 30-goal scorer. He's been so good for them in the playoffs as well, providing some excellent depth. I think he's he's charted as a second line center right now, or at least on the second line, and he's been getting minutes, and he's been taking full advantage of it. You know, every time he's out there, he's creating chances, he's getting to the net, he's making plays.
Right, and I think we had this discussion the other day over at WGR in the morning show. Who would be the hands-down Conn Smythe Trophy winner? Because I think obviously the answer now would be Marc-Andre Fleury, just yes, because he's been so dynamic in net. And even if they go to the Cup Final and they lose to, say, Washington or Tampa Bay, he still might win it and be the first guy to win on the losing team since Jean-Sébastien Chaguer.
Yeah, it's a Jiggy.
Now,
yeah,
if he does that, because, I mean, I don't see anybody from Tampa Bay or Washington being a clear-cut guy to win, especially looking at Washington. They've had such an even amount of production that it's just kind of like, you kind of can't pick Ovechkin or Kuznetsov over one or another.
I think you can pick Ovechkin, though.
You might be able to, but even then,
He's been their best player.
But even then, you put him up against Marc-Andre Fleury, and even close. Marc-Andre Fleury is going to win it.
Fleury's running away with it.
Right.
But I'm saying after that, I would put Ovechkin at two.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean,
any of them from Tampa, it's hard to figure out. You could put Braden Point there. You could put Stamkos there. Mm-hmm. You could put Hedman there.
Yeah.
That's really
I think Braden
Kucherov,
Point,
obviously.
But
too.
To your point, I think Braden Point would be a significant candidate for the Conn Smythe, just because he has played really well throughout this entire playoff. And yeah, if he comes up with a big game like you're saying he could tonight, then why wouldn't you give it to him? And then if he, of course, he'd have to produce well in the final
as well.
But
yeah.
Again, I think at this point it's going to be, I think it's definitely going to be Marc-Andre Fleury winning it, regardless if they win or lose the Cup.
Yeah.
Vegas.
I mean, Kuznetsov actually leads the NHL in points right now in the playoffs at 23. Ovechkin's got 21. And yeah, Braden Point's up to Braden Point is 16 points. Stamkos is 16. Kucherov is 17. You can't forget Jonathan Marchessault too from Vegas. He's been amazing.
Right, but Marchessault's been really good. But Fleury's clear cut
is
for sure.
100% the number one guy. So you're gonna pick Washington.
Yep, I pick Washington.
I'm gonna pick Tampa. We'll see what happens. But I think no matter who wins tonight, I think Vegas is winning the Cup. I think Vegas is winning it.
Really?
There's no stopping them. They have just been dominant the entire playoffs. And with Fleury playing the way he has been, this is very reminding me of the 2012 Kings team, where they went... They were the eighth seed, but they went 16-4 in the playoffs.
They were dominant. They were dominant.
They were up 3-0 in every series.
Right. Yep.
This Vegas team is obviously better than that Kings team, but their playoff run reminds me of it.
I agree. I'm not gonna deny that fact. I think that they certainly could easily go into the Stanley Cup Final and walk out just like the Kings did. But I don't know. There just has to be something that's going to stop this Golden Knights team and Marc-Andre Fleury. Washington, with the way that they are built so well and playing so well from top to bottom, if they do make it, I think that would be a tough matchup for Vegas. Vegas, again, as I've said and I will continue to say, they're a team that is a bunch of misfits from other teams put together, but they're a team that is built for today's NHL, built with speed and skill. They've got some good size. They've got some good physicality. But today's NHL, plain and simple, is speed and skill with, analytics numbers, if you want to throw out that as well. But Vegas was pretty much put together like that. They were a team last year at this time. They didn't have anybody on the team. And then next thing you know,
they had one player.
One player.
He's a prospect.
Yes. But, I mean, this team is put together to fit today's NHL. With the way that Washington is playing, I think they have a chance. If Tampa Bay wins and they go to the Cup Final, I don't see how Tampa Bay beats Vegas. I think they would have to have Vasilevsky stand on his head like he's done over the past few games, and he did over the course of the season. And they have to produce, and I don't think they've been getting enough consistency with production from their top guys. They did in the regular season. They didn't towards the end of the season. And then in the playoffs, it's been on and off.
Yeah. It's definitely been that way, but with the way Fleury has been, and just in the NHL, sometimes all it takes is just a hot goalie.
Yep.
Just
as
one hot player.
As we're seeing with Marc-Andre Fleury.
Exactly, and as long as Fleury maintains that, How can Tampa or Washington stop Vegas?
Yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. If Fleury shows signs of anything less than what he's been, whoever it is, Tampa or Washington, that their chance of winning goes up dramatically.
Oh yeah.
But until that actually happens, I can't see Vegas losing. It's very hard to see them losing. Because if Fleury was going to start to show it, he would have probably done it already.
I honestly feel that if Washington can go to the final, and again, it all depends on which Washington team shows up. Is it going to be the team that struggled in games 3 and 4 at home against the Lightning, or is it going to be the team in games 1, 2, and 6 that really came out and played phenomenal and against Tampa Bay, outskated, outperformed them in every aspect of the game? Which Washington Capitals team are we going to see tonight, first off? And then if they go to the final, which team are we going to see them be game in and game out?
Right.
Because if they come out and falter and struggle, Vegas is going to jump all over them. But if they come out and play a well-rounded game, they're going to test Vegas at every level, because Vegas is going to come out and play their game that they've done all year. They kind of have no pressure, because it's just kind of like, hey, this is our first year. We have zero expectations. We're just going to go out there and be ourselves. And that's what they've done all year, and look where they are right now. They're going to do the exact same thing in the Stanley Cup final.
Exactly.
And Washington better be ready, or Tampa Bay better be ready. I keep saying Washington as if they're going to win. I mean, they're my pick, but I do have to say, whoever's playing in the Cup final for the East has to be ready for Vegas, because Vegas is just going to do what they've done all year. They're going to exceed expectations. And I mean, to your point, they're unstoppable right now. Until they start faltering and showing signs of slowing down, you may be very right with your assumption that they win the Cup.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
It's going to be a heck of a lot of fun.
The final starts Monday, which means Derek and I on Sunday are going to do a complete finals preview, which we're going to have fun with.
I do kind of want to say real quick about the final.
Yeah.
Like, the NHL scheduling of the Cup final is awful. They have games 1 and 2 Monday, Wednesday.
Yep.
Game 3 and 4 Saturday and Monday. Then game 5 isn't until Thursday. Game 6 isn't until Sunday. And then game 7's Wednesday. Like, why wait so long between some of these games? You didn't do that for any of the other series. It's the same thing with like the game 7 between Winnipeg and Nashville. It's like, why wait 2 days?
Yeah.
You did every other game, you know, one day apart between 5 and 6, and then you do 2 games against 7.
Because they want the season to end as late as it can.
I don't understand that. Why would you want to compete against the NBA Finals when you know you're going to get crushed in ratings?
Yeah.
That's why the NHL season should start right at the end of September. That last week of September, start regular season games and finish your season before June 1st. That way you're not competing with the NBA Finals.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the thing that needs to happen. And the NHL continues to be so inept and just like, oh, hey, our league is perfect. Our league is fine. We have the best league in the entire sports world. No, you don't.
No.
You are so mismanaged and so run into the ground that Gary Bettman isn't going to leave until he's either just says, I quit, or he's dead. I mean, and to put it very bluntly, Gary Bettman's not leaving until one of those two things happen, until he decides he's gone or he dies.
Yeah.
And that sounds really harsh, and I apologize, but at the same time, it's just kind of like, this league isn't going to get any better until Gary Bettman and the people that are running the league with him are completely out of the league.
So game 7 right now, the Cup final scheduled for Wednesday, June 13th.
Yuck.
That will at least be the last game. We'll see if it actually is.
I mean, it's nearly going to be 3 weeks from now. Let's see. Yeah,
That's a 3 week series.
That is a 3 week series. That is way too long.
Yeah, that's really way too long. Definitely. So, all right, let's move past all of this. Let's talk about some offseason stuff, because some stuff has already been coming out. We just saw today, just before we start recording, Sabres have signed Rasmus Asplund to an entry level contract.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of expected that.
Yep.
And we'll finally see Asplund come to North America. He'll be at Dev Camp. He'll be at training camp. I think we'll expect him to start the season at Rochester, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. I don't think he's going to be at the NHL level. Again, unless he completely surprises many people and knocks everybody's socks off and proves that, hey, I'm ready to go at the NHL level, let's do this. And it could happen, but I think it's a long shot.
Yeah.
But Rasmus Asplund is going to be a player that is going to provide some really good minutes for you. He's going to be reliable in both ends of the ice. And he's ideally going to fill a third or fourth line center role at the NHL level. He's not going to pop out on the stat chart. He's not going to pop out with anything numbers-wise. But he's just so reliable in both ends. And he's such a sneaky player. I mean, it's like, 1 minute you see him in the corner, the play goes to the other side of the ice. Next thing you know, he's open, wide open, and you know, right next to the net, nobody's covering him, and the pass is going over to him, and he's scoring a goal.
Yeah,
it's those type of situations. Or he's also just got one of those like elusive shots that he's got the puck on a stick, and you think, oh, he's not going to shoot the puck, and then he lets go of it, and it's in the back of the net. It's like, oh, okay, that was a quick shot. That was a really nice play. So Asplund's gonna be here in Rochester next year. He should be in Rochester next year.
Yep.
He should be one of those players that probably plays the entire year in Rochester next year. Get himself comfortable at the North American game.
Yep.
And then hopefully you see maybe after next year, the year after that, maybe he gets some games at the NHL level and progresses his way up. And then maybe in 2-3 years, he'll be at the NHL level full time. But I mean, he was a guy that was a second round, that was a second round pick for the Sabres, 33rd overall.
Yep.
He managed to slip out of the first round because a lot of people thought, hey, he's going to probably go somewhere between 20 and 30 in the first round.
Yeah, he was looked at as a first round talent. Yeah.
And Tim Murray, yeah, a lot of the people are mad because, oh, hey, well, you traded Mark Pezek for Dmitry Kulikov and Asplund.
A lot of his trades were pretty bad.
But you look at how everything's kind of panned out. Pezek's been a nice piece for Florida. That's obvious.
Yep.
He'll probably be there for a while. I think he just re-signed a new contract either this offseason or last offseason.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the two.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's going to be there for a while and he's playing pretty well. Dmitry Kulikov, obviously that was a bust here in Buffalo. He's gone and he's in Winnipeg now. And the pick that Florida got, Adam Mascarin, isn't even going to sign with the team. He's going to re-enter the NHL draft.
That's the most hilarious part about the trade.
And Mascarin's a good player. He's a decent centerman. I don't know if he's a centerman or a winger, and I apologize for that.
I think he's a center.
But at the same time, he's a guy that seems like he was mistreated by Florida, and he just figured, you know what? I'll re-enter the NHL draft. He'll probably get drafted again.
Yeah,
probably not second round, but he'll get drafted again, and he'll be a highly regarded player. I mean, he'll probably sign an entry-level contract, go somewhere, and work his way up. I don't know if he's NHL-caliber type
we'll
of
see.
Player. But,
we'll see.
I mean, Mascarin was a good pick. He was a good pick at the time, and he's leaving Florida. But, you know, looking at the trade now, Asplund's the piece for the Sabres that if he pans out, he's going to be compared to Mark Pezek in that trade.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a trade-off like, okay, did the Sabres get a nice deal in this or did they not?
Yeah.
Originally, it was Kulikov, but now it's Asplund because Kulikov was a disaster. And if Asplund can turn out...
People forget that the Sabres traded two picks to essentially move up.
Yes.
To take Asplund.
Yeah. And it worked out for them at least to get Asplund.
It's worked out. Yeah, it's worked out so far. Now Asplund is here. He will be here. And he's good. You know, he got him heading to Rochester next. He's expecting to. Victor Olofsson as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff Poo.
Yep.
Those, you know, three forwards right there expected to come to Rochester next year. And then, you know, you still got the likes of Bailey, Baptiste, Fasching. We'll see where a lot of those guys are.
CJ Smith
as well. Danny O'Regan.
Yeah, looking ahead to Buffalo's situation Buffalo's situation in Rochester.
Yeah.
They're going to have guys like, and I'm just going to name a lot of names out there. They're all young players, but they're starting to fill out the Rochester lineup, and they're not going to have these fourth line guys that are just like Garrett Rowe or, you know, Garrett Ross or whatever.
Garrett Ross, but still, at the same time,
it's like some of these guys, it's just like, who are some of these guys?
Yeah,
I remember him. He was a flash in the pan with like the Blackhawks organization. Here's some of the names. Andrew Ogilvie, offseason signing.
Yep.
Rasmus Asplund, entry-level deal this year. Alex Nylander is going to probably be back unless they decide to trade him.
We'll see what happens.
Victor Olofsson.
Yep.
Cliff Poo.
Yep.
You got guys still like Kyle Kruskola, who's going to be under contract for another year. CJ Smith, Danny O'Regan. Sean Malone has to get re-signed from his restricted contract, but I think he'll get re-signed or tendered at least. Hudson Fasching might get tendered. And then you got Baptiste Bailey. And then on defense, you've all of a sudden got a good group of players like Lawrence Pilot, Will Borgen. Casey Nelson's probably up here to start the season. Brendan Gulley should be up here, but he might have to go back to Rochester. You never know. I think the defense is a little worse off than the offense, but you're starting to see these prospects that the Sabres have starting to fill important roles, not only in Buffalo, but also in Rochester.
This is what we've been waiting for.
And it's only going to get better because you've still got some other guys, like Marcus Davidson's another player who played really well at the World Juniors this year. He's going to probably play one more year in the Swedish Hockey League and then come over to the North American game and play in Rochester again.
Pretty much most players from the 2017 draft, Bottrell's first draft, will be here, you know, soon. It'll be sooner than later.
Well, like, I mean, the 2017 draft's a little bit different because nobody from the 2017 draft was selected in the juniors. Everybody was either in Europe or college.
Yeah.
Jacob Bryson's certainly one that I think he's going to be a senior coming up. He'll probably be a guy that comes over and plays in Rochester next year. But like, you know, Oskari Laaksonen, he's probably going to be another year in Finland. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's probably going to be another year in Finland, maybe two. Marcus Davidson probably will be another year in Sweden, then come here. But I mean,
no, that's what I mean.
You just never know.
I'm not expecting these guys to sign now. I'm expecting more of next year
for the European
and the
players
to continue in that youth movement.
For the European players, their contract, their rights are held for a contract, or you know, not contract, but their rights are held. Their draft rights are held for 4 years. In juniors, it's 2 years. In Europe, it's 4 years. And then college, it's when you become, you know,
it's a when
free
you're
agent
done.
Or whatever.
It's
yeah, it's when you're done in college. But, you know, the Sabres and Jason Bottrell so far in just one draft have done a pretty good job of filling some needs. They get a guy like Luukkonen, who's a big guy, who still needs some development in Finland. But he's projected to be a pretty decent goaltender.
Yeah.
I think the Sabres will definitely target another goaltender in this year's draft. I think they kind of have to because their goaltending depth is kind of lacking.
You kind of should draft a goalie, at least one goalie every year.
Right, at least a goalie every year. And then, obviously, Bottrell, I think, this year is going to target more defensemen. Dahlin's obviously going to help.
We know
he's
Dahlin.
Come here.
They have the 32nd pick, first pick in the second round, too.
Yep.
I would kind of expect that'll be a forward.
Yeah,
and then everything
that.
Else, yeah, you could probably say, you know, because they don't have a third round pick, but they got two forwards, so you might go defense both of those rounds. Maybe the fifth, you get a goalie, and then six and seven, you might go forward.
I got a situation here for you. So if the Sabres, let's say the Sabres actually make a trade with Edmonton, and Edmonton, for whatever reason, trade for Ristolainen and give up the 10th pick and clear
Klefbom.
X like Klefbom.
Okay.
If the Sabres are the 10th pick, there's another defenseman for you. You take another defenseman. I would not take a forward. I would take another defenseman.
Unless a forward drops.
And a guy that I would take that may have some good potential in the future is a guy like Bodie Wild. He's a right-handed shot defenseman. He's going to be going to Michigan this year to play with a guy like Quinn Hughes. They'll probably be a pairing like they were at the All-American Prospects game.
Isn't Quinn's brother going to Michigan too this year?
I don't know if it's this year or the next year. I mean, he played at the under-18 team.
It's Jack Hughes.
Yes, Jack Hughes is likely going to be the first pick.
He's going to be in the 2019 draft.
And he's going to be the first overall pick, too.
Likely, yeah. So I don't know if he's going to Michigan.
I don't know that off the
top
of my head. We probably should look that up real quick.
I'm going to check it. I'll check it real quick.
But looking ahead to a guy like Bodie Wild, he's a gritty type of defenseman who's a good two-way defenseman. He's a guy that could very well be the most well-rounded defenseman once his development is completed, just because he can provide some body. He's got a very good shot. He can be offensive while being reliable in his own end. He's a little bit of a wild card. He certainly does like to take his chances, and that could get him into trouble at some points. But if he can shore up his game, if he can become that well-rounded guy that, you know, some teams see him as, the Sabres have the 10th pick and they've got a number of defensemen there, which they will if they trade it. We're hypothetically speaking here that they trade for the 10th pick and give up Ristolainen and also get a defenseman from Edmonton. I'd be very interested to add Bodie Wild because, and not only that, he's a right-handed shot and the Sabres are lacking some right-handed defensemen right now in the organization. So that might be a nice add. But again, there's going to be a lot of guys that will be available at 10. You know, a guy like Ty Smith, who's a left-handed shot, very small, but he's, again, a prototypical defenseman of how the NHL wants to be it nowadays, where, yeah, you may not be big, but good skating, good puck moving, good vision on the ice. That's the kind of way the NHL is transitioning today. And again, Vegas has shown very well that, hey, we're the team that is today's NHL. even though we're a bunch of cast-off misfits, we're fitting today's style of NHL, and we're going to fit that style of NHL for the years to come.
So,
granted, they did acquire a guy like Ryan Reeves, who's an elephant on skates, but again,
he just scored the conference clinching goal.
He just had a Rob Ray moment where he scored the conference winning goal, and they're going to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
Mind you, he did it also in his hometown of Winnipeg.
He did. That's cool. It's pretty cool. So I checked out Jack Hughes real quick. I believe he's going to be with the under-18 team next year.
Again.
Because he's 17 right now. And he just turned 17 like a week ago. But then afterwards, he probably will commit to Michigan. But assuming he goes first overall, he might not even go to Michigan.
Right. He probably won't even play college.
Yeah. So, more off-season stuff. Talking about Asplund signing with the Sabres, a lot of other interesting pieces, especially with what the Sabres can do in the 2018 draft. Evander Kane, former Sabre, it's not official yet, but it's expected to be official. He's going to re-sign in San Jose. 7 years, $49 million. He's expected the price for Kane is expected what he's going to sign for in San Jose.
Right.
Big number.
Big number. Almost a little too big.
I'm really not surprised because I thought $7 million a year is what Kane was gonna get should he have hit free agency come July 1st.
Right.
And San Jose is the team that is gonna give him that. If Kane was never traded to San Jose, they would have been a team I would have expected to target him anyway.
Yeah. I mean.
So I feel like that this is. Basically a free agent signing for San Jose. Anyway, I won't look at it as they re-signed their player.
I'm looking at more of this as like San Jose is taking a gamble here on a player who we know goes out and competes night in and night out. He's going to give 100% of effort, 100% of the games every single season. Yes, he gets hurt. Yes, he has some off-ice baggage that, you know, can be some troubling. That is troubling. But at the same time, San Jose is getting a very good offensive player, and they're kind of setting that standard for their next wave of young offensive players that will be there because they've got guys like Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski and even Joe Thornton this year. They're all coming off the books within the next year or two.
Yeah.
They are going to be freeing up a lot of cap space. They're probably going to re-sign a guy like Couture. They're probably going to re-sign a guy like Pavelski. I mean, at least we all like
Pavelski would assume would be more
right because he's the captain. But
not even that. Pavelski's also getting up there in age. Pavelski's already like 33. Right.
But they could also
Couture is also I think like 28.
They could also look to add another name in free agency like John Tavares.
I know.
John Tavares would be a great addition for San Jose.
If they get Tavares and they also re-sign Kane, they got the first the top two guys that were available.
Yeah, and it's very possible that they could.
And it's very possible.
And looking ahead, it's a great deal for Evander Kane. He's earned it. He really has played well this season, especially. He's nearly scored 30 goals. He's only done it once in his career, but this was the first year in his career that he's actually proven, hey, I could produce offensively no matter where I go, and I'm staying healthy for once.
Yeah.
He only missed, I think, two games this year, and he was a healthy scratch for both of those games.
Yeah.
And in the playoffs, he did have that injury, but he played through it with, I think it was, a knee injury or something like that. Something like that. But he fought through it. He played quite well in the playoffs. And now he's going to stick around in San Jose for 7 more years. He's going to get paid a hefty, price at $7 million, which I think is a lot more than I thought he would have gotten.
I think that's what he would have gotten in free agency anyway.
I think he was looking
for that. Because you overpay in free agency. It's just how it is.
But I think the San Jose Sharks see him as he's going to thrive in this type of environment. It's not a big name city like New York City or Las Vegas or Los Angeles, but at the same time, San Jose is still just outside of San Francisco. Yep. San Francisco is a nice, bustling town. And I think they see it as he'd be a perfect fit for the San Jose Sharks, not only for the way he plays, but just period, just anything that he does. It's just
they need a player like him for his
lifestyle. And
they need a player of his ability.
Yes,
too.
They do. They do. But they also have other issues that they need to address just because, the team has been good, but they've never gotten over that hump.
Yeah.
And they really need to do that, and Kane might be part of the puzzle. I don't know. The off-ice baggage issues might be the biggest thing, and if he can clean it up, then fine. But
which he did in his brief time in San Jose. The report, a lot of reading was that the players loved him. he was fantastic there,
which is good. But and, I mean, again, you have players like
he's got now that he's returning. Now he's going to be spending the summer with them, you know, training and everything. Now it's a matter of, well, let's see if he really is moving past this baggage stuff.
Right,
and now we see it, and then we'll know. And plus, he's only 26. Mm-hmm. He's still young. So this contract takes him to when he's 33. It's not that bad.
No.
As long as he can maintain his level of play for at least another
5 years.
4 or 5 years, that contract's going to be worth it for San Jose, and they obviously have to win too.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see where San Jose is in, you know, 4 or 5 years.
And it certainly helps that Evander Kane's not looked upon to be a leader in the locker room, or he's not looked upon to be the best player.
He's not going to be asked to.
I think that was the problem in Buffalo and even Winnipeg is like, hey, you're a former fourth overall pick and a top player in the draft, and you showed right away that you could be a really, really top player. Some players, they come into the scene, they play really well, and then they're expected of that, and they just can't handle it. Evander Kane might have been one of those players. He goes to San Jose. He's under guys like Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, Joe Thornton. And if they sign John Tavares, certainly John Tavares.
God, they signed Tavares.
So Evander Kane is kind of in a really good situation in San Jose, where he's on a team that is good, that can be good for the long while, and they're a team that he doesn't have to be relied upon to be the top player. He's going to go out there and play his game and not have to face much pressure.
Yeah.
Unless he really starts to struggle and doesn't produce at all, he's going to be just fine out there, and he's going to be a guy that, you know, can certainly help San Jose become a powerhouse team in the Pacific for the next 4 or 5 years.
All important for this signing too. Sabres fans are guaranteed a first round pick from San Jose.
Yep, whether it's in 2019
it could be
or
next year, but it could be 2020. Yeah, because of the lottery protection.
The only thing that hasn't been clearly brought up yet and discussed on the term of that trade is what is the terms of that lottery protection? Is it just a top three pick or is it a top 10? Because the Duchesne trade with Colorado and Ottawa is that Ottawa this year had a top 10 protection. So if they were picking in the top 10, they would retain the pick this year, and then they would give next year's first round pick.
Which they did, which is what they're doing.
Which is what's going to happen, obviously. But
I think what I read was that it's supposed to be just if San Jose misses the playoffs entirely, they can keep the pick if they want to, and then they have to give the 2020 first round pick to Buffalo.
Right, and then if they obviously win a top three pick, then they would keep the pick.
They would have to miss the playoffs anyway for that
right,
to happen.
Right, exactly.
So and it's like if they can miss the like they can miss the playoffs by 1 point and have pick 14 or 15, and they could still keep that pick if they want to. I think that's where it is. Where if they make the playoffs, even if it's pick 16, then they would have to give that pick to Buffalo.
Yep. I mean, it would be nice.
It's fun. But you know what? No matter what, the Sabres are getting another first round pick from San Jose within the next 2 years. Fine.
And even
that's
if San
fine.
Jose just
whatever,
misses
whatever
out,
it is.
Even if they just miss out on the playoffs and they pick 15th, 14th, 13th, and they don't win a pick and they're still picking where they are, they might still be liable to think, you know, whatever. It's an all right prospect, but we'll move on.
It depends on the draft.
Right, because I think next year's draft is a weaker draft. There's supposed to be some good players at the top. Obviously, Jack Hughes is going to be number one. I think next year's draft class is weak on the defensive part of the, you know, of the prospect
pool. Plenty of time
pool.
With that.
And the forwards, not great as well. So maybe next year they would.
Right, yeah.
And you never know. Maybe there's a defenseman or a forward that totally steps up next year, kind of like a Patrick Laine did a couple years ago where.
Yeah, he wasn't looked at.
To start the year in his draft year, he was projected a top 10 guy, but certainly not a top 2 guy.
Yeah.
And the way he played in the World Juniors and the way he played in, you know,
after that,
the Finnish Elite League, he was a superstar. He became a superstar, then goes to Winnipeg and continues playing like a superstar, and he's worthy of a second overall pick.
Yeah. We talked about Tavares real quick before we end off. Lou Lamoriello has left the Leafs, and now he's the president of hockey ops with the New York Islanders. So I want to talk just a little bit about Toronto and the Islanders and like pretty much what's going on. So Lamoriello announces a few weeks ago that he's stepping down from GM. He was going to be a senior advisor, and then the Leafs announced that Kyle Dubas, 32-year-old, was going to be the new general manager of the Leafs. And now Lamoriello leaves. And now he's the president of hockey ops with the New York Islanders. And now Mark Hunter, who was the assistant GM for the Leafs for a while, has now left as well. So what's kind of going on in Toronto right there? Like to me that kind of says that Lamoriello wanted Mark Hunter to be the GM and Shanahan wanted Kyle Dubas. And because Shanahan has the final say, because he's the president, Dubas becomes GM. Lamoriello sees an opportunity where he doesn't have to be there. He's getting paid more money to be the president of the New York Islanders. And it's a bigger role. And now he can do something his way with that team. And if Mark Hunter, if Gart Snow gets fired and Mark Hunter becomes the new GM of the Islanders, there's no doubt in my mind that Lamoriello wanted Hunter to be the GM of the Leafs.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly a weird situation in Toronto because, I mean, I don't doubt that Kyle Dubas is going to do a good job. I mean, the Arizona Coyotes hired John Chyka
a couple years ago
they wanted, as a 27-year-old,
They originally wanted to hire Dubas.
Yeah.
And Colorado was looked at to potentially hire Dubas last year.
Yeah. I mean, John Chyka is a pretty decent general manager. He's done some things that's kind of like, oh, hey, like, I mean, he's a young kid. He's not a dude that's messing around either. He's pretty well respected. I think Kyle Dubas has established himself as a young general manager that is already a well respected person around the league.
Yeah.
And for a guy like Lou Lamoriello, what better situation to kind of move on from your role in Toronto where, yeah, you served general manager for 3 years, but now you're going to be president of hockey ops in New York for the Islanders, a team that is going to be getting a new arena, a team that has some good young pieces, but they're probably at more on the downswing right now. And
who knows with Tavares.
Right.
Which I want to ask a real quick too.
But with Lamoriello, I mean, how does he go into New York and retain Garth Snow? Garth Snow's got to be. Yeah. I think he's the worst general manager in the league. He's one of the worst general managers.
Yeah, he's got to be gone.
He's got to be gone. I don't know about, you know, Doug Waite's future as the head coach, just because it wouldn't be his guy. But we'll see how that goes. Just because, you know, I mean, I really think that it's just time for them to move on. Just because Garth Snow's been there forever and he's done literally nothing to help the team.
Yeah.
Besides drafting
John Tavares, which anyone can do.
But that's a given. And if they lose John Tavares, then they're certainly going to be a team that could be projected as a bottom tier team in the NHL who would be up for potentially drafting Jack Hughes if they win the draft lottery.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
I just can't see how Lamoriello doesn't go to New York and I can't even see how he hasn't already fired Garth Snow as the general manager, but I'm sure he's going through some evaluation processes right now. It's early, and maybe they just decide, you know what, we're going to move on, you know, within the next couple of weeks, or they might keep him through the draft, go through the draft process, and after the draft is over, they might say, all right, we're moving on from Garth Snow. Mark Hunter, come on in.
At least after free agency starts too, because I read too that Mark Hunter can't actually join another team until like mid to late July.
Right.
So if that's going to happen, which I do think it's going to as well, Garth Snow probably gets fired after free agency starts, maybe like a couple weeks in. Mm-hmm. And then once Hunter's eligible to be hired by another team, they announce the hiring of Mark Hunter as GM of the Islanders.
And Mark Hunter's certainly a guy that is a great scout. Yeah.
He's one of the best scouts out there. Him and Dubas are responsible for a lot of what the Leafs are built on right now. You know, it was both of them that collaborated together for the 2015 draft, which I thought the Leafs did fantastic with that draft, with who they got.
And how Toronto, the Marlies, are looking in the AHL right
now. Dubas was the GM of the Marlies. Well. Yeah.
They're great.
And they're amazing.
They got a great head coach in Sheldon Keefe.
And Dubas had his handprints all over the Phil Kessel trade.
Yep.
In terms of what Toronto was able to get back from that.
Exactly. He was kind of like a cap guy too, kind of trying to figure all that out.
It's no surprise that I think it was Shanahan's plan all along for the last 3 years to have Dubas as the GM now. Lamoriello was only going to be there for 3 years anyway. Now that he's with the Islanders, how does this affect Tavares?
I don't know if it affects it at all. I think Vander Kane's the type of player that I think he was going to go to free agency no matter what the Sharks were offering. But Now that Lamoriello comes in, he's going to bring some stability. He's going to bring some change to the organization. I mean,
maybe
he's
Tavares
a guy that's
sees
very
that,
well respected.
Especially if Tavares knows that Gart Snow's not going to be there and Lamoriello's going to bring somebody else in who can do the job better. Mm-hmm. Now with the new arena coming as well, he might be able to convince Tavares to stay. Well, it depends on how much money, obviously.
Right.
But he might. But we all. But remember too, we all thought Stamkos was going to go to free agency in 2016, and Yzerman got him to stay.
But the difference.
There's
there.
A lot of different factors with it, though. But remember, a lot of the talk was that Stamkos is gone. He's leaving Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone like that was almost consensus.
Until everybody decided, oh well, I'm going to take a less cap so we can try and win.
And then all of a sudden, no one saw that coming.
The biggest difference, though, between
the Tavares
situation
and we're pretty much seeing the same thing from Tavares
and the Stamkos situation is the Lightning were a team that were built to win for several years to come, and he didn't have to leave and be able to find another team that could succeed. He could stay in Tampa and keep winning, whereas on the island, he's going to have to decide, okay, am I going to stay and stick through another couple of years of some pretty bad hockey, or am I going to go to a team like San Jose or I guess Montreal if you really want to, that can go there and I can win right away and be a contributing factor?
I also wouldn't rule out Vegas
or Buffalo.
Or Buffalo, yeah, sure.
But I don't think he's coming to Buffalo.
No, I don't
almost,
think so.
I'm almost on
if
the fence.
If I had
of,
to put three teams that's not the Islanders that are gonna that's gonna sign Tavares, I would say Montreal, San Jose, and then Vegas would be the three.
Yeah, and I almost, from my standpoint, would say I don't even want to sign John Tavares just because of what he's probably going to garner in free agency.
He's going to garner a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he's 27 years old. He's in the prime of his career,
he's
but
it'd be a seven-year contract, brings him to 34.
Goes to 34.
It's probably going to be in the $10 to $11 million a year.
Right, and you've got...
Which the Sabres
can
do. They can make it work, but is it worth making it work?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you could say absolutely it is. It's John Tavares we're talking about. He also still has to want to come here as well. We don't know where he wants to go if it's not the Islanders. I'm starting to really get the feel that he's going to stay. I'm starting to get that feeling. This change in management now... They might be able to convince him. Lamoriello is really good at his job. No matter what he does, he always seems to do really well.
Mm-hmm.
So with the way that the Leafs were turned around right away as well, John Tavares might see that and think he did that with them. He might be able to do it with us. If I stay, I can be a part of that. So we'll see what happens. Plus, the Islanders have that all-important eighth-year option. They can offer him an eight-year contract mm-hmm. at a little bit less money, you know, and he'll still get relatively what he wants. He could pretty much sign a similar contract that Eichel signed, an eight-year, $80 million, or he could sign a seven-year, $80 million to another team. You know, his money per year would be up, but it'd be one less year. So I don't know. I'm starting to kind of lean towards he's going to stay with the Islanders, but if he doesn't re-sign, I wouldn't be surprised. I think no matter what happens to whether he re-signs, whether he leaves, Gart Snow's fired. I think bringing in Lamoriello is just a sign that he's gone.
Oh yeah,
it's no longer his call anymore.
Yeah, I can't.
You've got a they got gone. A guy that's above him now that's calling the shots.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Garth Snow should be gone anyway. He should have been gone a few years ago. It's
kind of
like
the situation
gone a long time. With Darcy Regier and Lindy Ruff, where it was just like,
the island.
All right, we're waiting. It's like, hey, these guys keep managing to find ways to win games and be able to help, but at the same time, this team
you're
hasn't gone
over the next
anywhere.
Level. Yeah, you're not getting them over the next level.
Why are they still here? And then next thing you know, it's like Darcy or Lindy gets fired, then Ron Ralston comes in, and then a year and a half later, Darcy's gone.
Yeah.
A major overhaul in Buffalo. And I think a major overhaul in the island is coming soon.
It's coming soon.
Lamoriello
is
the first piece, and that's the
Islanders
right way to go, is to get that first piece.
Yeah. The Islanders have not had a good GM in so long.
Mike Milbury, what are you talking about? He was the best general manager.
Oh, he was amazing. The old Fisherman
Gorman
logo.
Jerseys, yeah.
Yeah. The Alexei Yashin, trading Luongo.
Great moves.
Awesome. Just training prospects and whatever. Okay. That's gonna do it.
Now we've gone off the rails. Yeah, it's time to end this.
Yeah, we're done. No, we're done. Yeah. That's going to do it for the Leftovers Podcast. I'm Frank Huckery. Brayton, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
No,
this was a fun talk.
We always have fun. And thank you for filling in for Derek's lazy bum.
Lazy bum.
He's a lazy bum.
Do your job.
Check out everything on
no days off.
Yeah. Check out WGR550.com. Everything on demand section. Brayton with producing Howard and Jeremy in the morning. You got Instigators. One Bills Live. You got Chopin Bulldog in the afternoon. Ryan Gates usually out with Nightcap. Sports Talk Saturday with Sal or Nate Geary. You with Sports Talk Sunday as well with Joe. Yep. Everything else, you know, all the articles and opinions and stuff that are up there as well. WGR550.com in the on demand section. All the written stuff as well, as I just said. I'm Frank R. Curry. You can follow me at Twitter at Frank R. Curry, ARCURY. You can follow Brayton on Twitter at BJWilsonWGR. And don't forget to follow WGR550.com at WGR550. This is Frank R. Curry with the Leftovers Podcast. We'll see you later.